Pittsburgh, I love ya. This is Brian Edward, and you're listening to Berg Vivant, Pittsburgh's cultural talk magazine, delivered digitally, straight up, shaken, and stirred. Tonight's broadcast brought to you by our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Zafalo's Banquet and Event Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, one of the most beautiful and unique venues in the greater Pittsburgh area for weddings, corporate dinners, fundraisers, and more. Visit clubzafalo.com. Off the Wall Theater, enlivening, educating, and entertaining audiences in the Pittsburgh region. View their current season at insideoffthewall.com. Arcade Comedy Theater, hosting local and national comedians, sketch comedy, improv, and more. 811 Liberty Avenue, downtown. Be sure to like them on Facebook or find them at arcadecomedytheater.com. Berg Vivant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. You can learn more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. Kurt Shaw, president of Shaw Galleries, El Presidente. Good to be chatting with you here in the Shaw Gallery, downtown Pittsburgh, Liberty Avenue.
We're glad to have you.
Well, thank you. You have a ton of amazing things in a very, very small space. How do you manage this?
It's a lot of effort because we have over 3,000 things in this store currently.
That is your inventory, 3,000 items. Well, 3,000 plus.
Probably. Yeah, we have over 4,000 things in inventory total. And we're still working on processing it all the time.
This is a treasure trove here. And, you know, just during my visit today, what I'm finding is that it's so much more than art. In fact, you could say more artifacts than art. Antique maps and historical documents really seem to be prevalent here.
Oh, yeah. We specialize in works on paper, antique works on paper, prints, maps, even deeds and stock certificates that go back 300 years. We've got prints here as old as the 1750s.
And this is, you know, unusual, I think, to find so many of these things in one place.
Yeah, it is in the United States. Now, in Europe, like you say, in London, for example, you'll find print shops like this. And I wanted to bring something like that to Pittsburgh.
Now, why do you think that is, that that would be more popular in Europe than here in the United States?
Well, a lot of it has to do with their history, of course. You know, there's a lot more interest in history in terms of heraldry, and especially in English history, which we learned a lot through the interns that work here and my gallery director, Naomi Bean. By researching the material that we have, we've learned that connection. And England, of course, is filled with history.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of our prints are English. A lot of them come from England. And you know, it's just a long-standing tradition in Europe to have print shops like this. They're not so much a thing in the States, although in New York City, Philadelphia, you'll find them, a few on the West Coast. This is the only one in our region. You'd have to go to Philadelphia to find anything like this.
And that's incredible to know that we have this here in Pittsburgh, so folks can stop down. You've got hours they can kind of come in.
Oh, yeah.
Right, take a look, take a stroll.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I know that Europe has a very deep, deep, deep history, but so does Pittsburgh itself. And you certainly have a respect for that here, because just looking around, there are some incredible pieces dating back to the founding of this city.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we always have maps of Pittsburgh. We've sold and handled many of Fort Pitt, Fort Duquesne. They kind of come and go because people really look for those.
Mm-hmm.
And we have collectors that are always asking, what do we have when we get it in? You know, if they want to know if we got it in. But we have a lot of early Pittsburgh maps, and we're known for that. We just sold one today of Lawrenceville from 1872.
Really?
Yeah, and these are the originals now. These are not reproductions. They are all engravings that have been hand-colored at the time when they were produced. You know, there was a company in Philadelphia called Hopkins that made them for like six or seven decades. And we've got several by them. And then other map makers like Johnson, which is right behind us, and several other key cartographers of this country and others.
I could actually use a modern map of Lawrenceville, because after happy hour at Tamari, I can't find my car, so I might be calling you. But we got some incredible pieces here. I mean, this one that's behind you, and we'll show a close-up of it, that's Allegheny County.
Yeah, right? This is an Evarts. That was a publisher. This is 1876. Evarts was a publisher, an American publisher, that produced a lot of atlases around the 100th anniversary of the country. And they went into various cities, and they got sponsors to work on, to sponsor the production of a volume. Behind us, we actually, usually, we're not here today, but we generally have some lithographs from the Evarts volumes that relate to the county. So you can see homesteads that existed then. We've had customers find their homes, their actual homes wow. depicted, and they'll buy that. And you know, this is from that volume as well. These are very rare.
So something
pieces.
Like that of Allegheny County, would that have been hand-drawn, hand-inked, or were these printed in several series? How was this, and why was this created?
Yeah, well, they're engraved on the steel plates. Mm. And then printed either as portfolios or books or atlases. But the thing is they go into production. They were hand colored at the time.
Wow.
Using stencils and watercolors. So what you're looking at there behind us is actually all that beautiful color was laid in there by hand.
Wow. Now we've got another piece over here that we'll do a close-up yeah. shot of. This is a deed to essentially what is now Southside Works. Tell us about this.
Oh yeah, we have several deeds, Allegheny County deeds, from the Oliver Building to this particular piece, which is to that section where Southside Works is now, as you've described, which was originally called Ormsby after John Ormsby, who was an American Revolutionary War soldier. Who was deeded that property amongst a total of 3,000 acres, including what's now Carrick, the main part of the South Side, and the Ormsby section. He had 5 children; 3 survived. His daughter Sydney Gregg was given, and her husband were given the Ormsby section. After her husband died, she tried to keep the family together and was running into major debt, and she had an attorney, which I'll say this name and a lot of Pittsburghers will know.
Edgar Snyder.
No, but the Edgar Snyder of the day, who was Neville Craig.
All right.
Okay, so Craig is Isaac Craig had the glassworks at the base of the Duquesne
Incline. Yes, indeed.
And one of his sons, Neville, was an attorney, very prominent attorney. So she had Neville Craig declare her a lunatic in the Pennsylvania Supreme Court in 1834. And in 1835, this deed was issued to sell the property to Jacob Byerly for $308. So it's an interesting piece of Pittsburgh history.
The Southside Works essentially sold for $308.
$308. Yes.
I can't get dinner and a movie for that down there today.
I know,
amazing. But why did she had herself declared insane?
It was part of...
Was this a scheme to kind of... Or was she legitimately like, I need help?
She needed help. Okay. She needed out of right. debt. She was incurring tremendous amount of debt because she had like 5 children with her husband. And like I said, he died early.
Mm-hmm.
So to speed up the process, she was so much in debt that the sale of the land wasn't going to cover it, and she got Neville Craig to go through the process.
And again, what we have is the original deed from that.
Oh yeah,
sale.
It's the original deed.
Incredible.
Yeah, everything in this store is original, period, except for we have some reproductions of bird's eye views, but otherwise they're all.
There is a lot of history here. I mean, it's kind of like a museum in a lot of ways, except everything's for sale, which we should stress too.
Yeah.
But another large part of your business here that operates out of Shaw Gallery is appraisals.
Oh yeah, that's a big part of our business. We do many every week. I do several. People come in and they bring in everything from paintings and prints to we had a 16-foot oriental rug walk through here once.
You got like a little antiques roadshow going on, kind of.
Yeah.
You never know what's going to show up.
True.
Is it fun for you, appraising?
Oh, I love it. Yeah. I love the history of it. Earlier this year, I was tapped by mutualart.com, which is a huge website, international, and I'm now one of their appraisers. So I wake up every morning and I do appraisals for them. And I love it when people come in because I get to meet people and I enjoy the interaction. Plus, I help facilitate the sale of those items. Many times they come in, they not only want to know what it's worth, but they want to try to sell it. So we help them figure out where what auction house to take it to. Because right now, that's really the way to sell things.
Well, yeah, and that's great, too, because, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of folks out there that, you know, the first step is, well, what is it? And the second is, well, then what do I do with it? And you guys really kind of have the follow-through there to, you know, point them in the right direction if they do want to sell. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, plus, they, you know, by knowing what it's worth and having a certificate that states what it's worth, mm-hmm. they can then negotiate with the auction house to figure out what's the reserve or opening price of that piece so that, you know, if it you don't want it to open too low. Cause
right, so they get a fair deal.
Exactly.
You're a hero for the people.
Well, I try.
What's the craziest thing you've seen come in for appraisal?
Craziest thing. Well, we did have one man walk a beautiful Moreau lithograph in here that he got as a wedding gift, and he didn't know what it was worth, of course, and he said his uncle was really the arch, and he wanted to try to sell it. I don't suggest this, but he wanted to try to sell it without his wife, who he was divorcing, know about it.
Oh.
Yeah. We facilitated the sale through Aspire Auction in Cleveland. I don't know whatever happened divorce-wise. But
well, you get a lot of human stories, in this business, don't you? Human
stories, yeah. We have, like, you know the TV show Pickers?
Yeah, yeah,
there's
I've seen it.
A certain set of people that come in that, you know, they're always going to flea markets, and they see something, they'll bring it to me because they want to know what it's worth, and then they might just find a way to quick sell it to, you know, granny silver. I get a lot of silver plate in here and silver sets, you know, people have bring them because they were left with certain things, mm-hmm. you know.
And actually, an appraisal is pretty affordable.
Yeah, because we only charge $25 per item, and that's if we can place a value on it. If we're not able to place a value on it, or if it's worthless, so to speak, we don't charge you.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah. So,
and I mean, for $25 alone, the peace of mind is worth that. You know.
Yeah.
So you can tell people, you know, this silver set's worth, you know, $3,000.
Right.
To have those bragging rights, I'd put down $25. Sure. Yeah. Indeed.
It only takes about 10 minutes.
Wow. See, and I think that, you know, there's a misconception out there that it's a, you know, very lengthy process, very expensive to do, but anybody can do it.
Yeah.
You are here to serve. That's fantastic.
Yeah, and it's one of my favorite parts of the job, definitely. Yeah.
And it's a beautiful setting to have something appraised in. I mean, I'm looking around here. What does your place look like? What's the decor at your house?
That's great, because it's not this. It's funny you should ask that. Shortly after I opened this business, I moved to a condo on Mount Washington and in an ultra contemporary place, the Trimont. And, you know, that place is very contemporary, and so are my walls. So I have very stark abstraction, you know, and very contemporary lines in the furniture, etc. So my daughter and I, you know, we kind of look at it like the antithesis to all of it.
Wow. You kind of have a yin-yang in your life.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Because clearly you love what you have here,
yeah.
you know, but it might not fit there. So this is kind of like you kind of have the best of both worlds.
Oh, yeah.
Contemporary and historic. It's pretty neat.
Yeah.
I find that my biggest problem is I run out of wall space to hang things, you know.
Yeah, that's a problem when you're an art dealer, an antique dealer, yeah.
You keep finding something you like. So now I'm just switching out. Antique posters are my big thing. That's antique movie posters or vaudeville posters, you know, from all around the world. But, of course, you know, New York City was big for that turn of the century. France, you know, not necessarily all the Trek, but sort of that, you know, style, that era. You know, neat things and foreign posters that came out. So that's kind of where I live, you know.
They're big. How do you hang them?
I usually get just a reprint that's, you know, smaller. They're not, you know, original or anything like it. If they were, I'd be bringing them to you for $25 to tell me what I can get for them, you know. But these antique maps and things, these light me up too, especially because of the history that's attached with them.
Yeah, the maps are fascinating. People come in here just to look at the maps sometimes and, you know, and I encourage that. You don't have to come with the idea that you have to buy something. You know, it's a place where you can come and actually see, well, hey, this is where my grandparents' house was.
Yeah.
You know, and then what's also interesting is we call them snapshots of history, because whether it's a Pittsburgh map or, you know, a map of the world, you can see from the time period, like, for example, this is from 1885 at Johnson and Browning,
mm-hmm.
quite a beautiful piece. And, you know, Asia...
You can almost see Pittsburgh from here.
Well, yeah. And Asia's quite different the way it's... There's, like, the Sea of Japan, which, you know, is not called that anymore. You know, you can see what things are called, and they're not the same.
Well, you know, I read an article recently, and everything's flying around on social media, so I saw this, that maps have been semi-intentionally misrepresenting proportions of countries for a very long time, so our impression of proportions on a world map is very different from what it actually is. Is this true?
There's a lot of debate about that. I know exactly what you're talking about. I can't remember the name of the cartographer that... It was 1972, I believe, that he figured that out. And there's that's hotly debated in the cartographic world.
But, I mean, couldn't we look at a satellite photo now and just put it to rest?
Yes, but that map... takes the idea that, you know, you're seeing a skewed version in that, you know, you have to take perspective into
it. Because of the curvature of the globe.
Right. So there's that. Now, we've had some very interesting people walk in here. Just last week, Alex Valentine walked in here, and he's a recent retiree to the city, but he used to work for a large cartography company. He mapped the moon 5 times.
What?
Yes. And
from Earth.
But we're trying to convince him to do a lecture here.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
I want to cover that. If you get him here, I want to be here for that. That'd be cool. So what did you do? Just like from photos of the moon, just kind of map like the craters, that kind of detail?
Well, NASA information, you know, what's rotten back, and what he told me. Broughton, that's a Pittsburgh word.
Yeah, but we know where we're at. Thank you for throwing that in.
Yeah, like Ed says that. The moon.
Get your planets in line, man.
I know, really. I have maps to tell me. But yeah. Whatever those, you know, when those people went up in space and they brought back all that information.
Although that's debated too.
Oh, now you're going to get
did he find
conspiracy
theories. Did he find an American flag up there? That's the thing.
I don't know. But he is, you know, that's somebody who walks in here and I'm just like, wow, if I didn't own a map store, I would never meet such an incredibly interesting man.
This is a business, and as you said, you one of your favorite things about it is, you know, the people that you get to interact with. I imagine that this is a business that you meet some fascinating individuals.
Oh, yeah.
With fascinating items, fascinating stories.
I once had a near fight break out here over the history of the Prussian War.
A fight?
War.
On Liberty Avenue?
Yeah,
You're kidding me.
I know, right?
I don't believe it. But over the Prussian War.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, because it was like, no, you have your history wrong. No, no, it happened this year.
Did you have a map to back you up?
I did, actually. That's what sparked the debate.
So maybe somebody didn't like learning the truth.
Yeah.
But I do. I mean, really, I was here 10 minutes and I learned so much more about Pittsburgh than I had ever known before and saw it in maps. I mean, it's a really cool place to kind of come down. Like I said, it's like a museum that you can visit free of charge.
Oh, yeah. Sense. Sure.
So that's pretty neat. Right here on Liberty Avenue.
Yeah, we're open here 5 days a week. So.
How did you get into this business?
Well, I don't know if some of your audience locally might know that I'm also the art critic for the Tribune Review, and I've been doing that for 12 years. But along the way, I was kind of looking for something else that, you know, I mean, I always thought about opening an art gallery. Of course, I was an artist first. And then along the way, as an appraiser, though, I had gone to New York City quite a bit with the appraisal association I'm with, and I met Grammer Rader, who is the world's top map dealer. I ended up becoming very good friends with him, and that's kind of what sparked my interest, because I thought, boy, you know, I was visiting his place and even stayed at his place one time, and I'm seeing maps from like the 15th century, you know, on his walls, massive, gorgeous pieces, I was just totally enamored of all of it. I thought, this is some of the most beautiful things I've ever seen, and I, as a writer about art, to make that switch to maps was, you know, a little bit different, but when you start to get into it and you start to see the beauty of it. I mean, if you look at this Allegheny County map, the color in that is just magnificent.
And still, I mean, for its age, it's very vibrant.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And everything we frame, we put it behind conservation clear glass, which knocks out like 99.9%
UV. And that's important, too, because sun actually, I do know this, does a lot of damage.
Oh, my gosh. As an appraiser, I see things come through here, and I see a lot of acid burn marks and a lot of damage. And pieces that, you know, quite frankly, could be worth 10, 20 times what they are, you know, based on the condition. So condition is important, and preserving condition is very important.
I myself don't go out into the sun unless I have to. That's why we're doing this interview at night, you know.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that you yourself were an artist, or maybe still are. I don't know. Do you?
I do paint, and I'm planning on having a show here myself, which took 5 years to do it.
Oh, yeah?
That'll happen in April.
Do you appraise your own work?
Yes, it's worthless.
Oh, no, we don't want to say that.
No, but I mean, the reality is, and I know this as an art critic, is that as artists, you have to get out there and sell it. If you don't get it out of your living room or out of your studio, it is worthless. You have to get it into the world.
Yeah.
And it takes time and courage, and even for myself, it's taking me time to get that ready and prepare. But I used to build wall sculptures for cruise ships and corporations, and that's how I made my living.
Oh, any of them still floating around out there?
Funny you should say floating around, because Royal Caribbean was my biggest customer, and their Sovereign of the Seas, I did several wall sculptures for their restaurants, and Destiny of the Seas as well. That was in the mid-90s. And then the largest piece I've done was for Progressive Medical in Columbus. I built a massive clock, 22 feet wide,
wow,
14 feet high, and that is still there, of course. You can see that.
Now, I imagine that, you've really got to have an eye when it comes to, not only critiquing art, but appraising it. I mean, how do you approach that? Because I figure, everybody's got different tastes. And there may be something that I see hanging on a wall in a gallery that just isn't my taste. And even if I had seen it at like a yard sale for a dollar, I probably wouldn't have paid any mind to it. But here, or in a gallery, something is 4,000, maybe even millions. So what? How do you assess that? What makes something valuable? What makes something good art?
Well, that's a good question, because basically, what we deal in here, the art, we do have a lot of art pieces here. Are what is considered secondary market value pieces. There's two ways of looking at that. In a contemporary art terms, the artist and their dealers, they set the prices, they create the market. If they can create the market by many ways, that sometimes it's created just by fluff, then that's one market. But what we deal in is the secondary market. That happens, the prices are set through auctions, and that's basically how we appraise. We're running comparables on everything around the globe that's mm-hmm. done on the piece. So let's say, for example, the piece behind you, there's a Dorothy Hence above you. And that piece, that has previous pieces by her that have sold on the market, and that would help determine, what the value of that piece is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I've answered your question.
No, it does. Yeah, and especially as far as that secondary market is concerned, I think determining the price for the primary market is a whole other story.
Yeah, it's a whole other thing. Yeah, and that's where a lot of dealers will say, well, if you like it, it's worth $1 million.
Right.
So, I mean, there is...
But now what if I like it and I'm not a millionaire?
Will
I get a deal? I don't know. But let's see, it's a very deep business.
Yes. It's, there's, I'm sure we all see it in the newspaper all the time. Okay, this Picasso sold for $50 million. This Warhol sold for $128 million. That's one example, though. That's the 1% of the art world where big money's fueling it.
Picasso, though, painted a lot. I mean, they're all like sorts of little, tiny Picassos that are relatively affordable. He just made so much stuff.
Well, actually, I'm glad you brought him up, because he's the quintessential example of what an artist needs to do in their lifetime. You see, many people say, and they say when they come through here, well, it's a dead artist, so it must be worth money.
Mm.
If only good artist is a dead artist, and all these other things. Mm. The reality is, like Picasso did in his lifetime, the artist creates the market by creating the work. The more work that the artist creates, the more they disseminate it via sales, trade, or giving it away, the better that there's a market sustained. What people don't realize is that on the secondary market, that all the named artists, and we're not talking like Picasso's, but like say, if you want to say, Twachtman, or even local artists like Aaron Gorson, who painted here in the 1930s. These artists all created a certain amount of work in their lifetime. There's a theory that any artist that's on the secondary market that's dead and gone has, in essence, created at least 1,000 paintings or works of art in their lifetime, because it takes that many to circulate, to create a market that rises, the prices will rise.
Because I mean, I might almost think that the less there was out there, the more valuable it would be. But I guess you got to have something out there to get yourself known.
Oh yeah, and I have families come in here and say, "Well, my grandfather was an artist. You know, we've got 50 paintings sitting in our living room, and we don't know what to do with them." And I always tell them, sell a few of them as soon as you can. Go to an auction house and try to sell them, because that will establish a record, and from that the market will build. There, let's put it this way. 50 paintings in a living room, whether it's the artist's living room or their heirs or even a collector who buys so many of one artist, that devalues the work. There, you know, the work has to be out in the open market. It has to be circulating.
And a museum or gallery wouldn't hurt either, right?
Yeah. We do have art shows here on occasion.
Oh, yeah, and we should say, you know, that you know, although it's primarily historical documents and maps, there is a little bit of everything here in this gallery.
Oh, yeah, well, I think any Midwestern, and can we say we're in the Midwest? I don't know.
I prefer not.
Yeah. We're too cosmopolitan for that.
A little
bit. But any gallery, you know, that's not in New York City has to diversify to keep it going. I mean, there's challenges to any business.
Well, yeah. I mean, and galleries come and go. So what do you feel has been the secret to your success?
Well, probably because I'm a certified appraiser. You know, I have most of the galleries in this region refer their clients to me, and all of the museums do. So there's the fact, you know, that I'm in that business, and I did the business before I opened this business. I used to travel to galleries in Columbus, throughout West Virginia, and all the way up to Erie, and I did appraisals for these galleries. So one of the reasons I opened this gallery and wanted to open a gallery was to have a place where people could come to me instead of me going to them. So that was pretty important. Obviously, that's one way that we keep this gallery going. And we also do antique shows. We take these pieces. I don't drive a regular car anymore. I actually drive a cargo van as my daily vehicle.
Got to do what the job calls for, you know?
And I will fill it with, you know, not all, but most of the things in the store. And I will go off to Cleveland to an antique show. I'll go down to Washington, D.C., and I'll set up amongst all these other antique dealers. And I'm known as the antique paper guy. I mean, they have furniture and you know, all other crazy things, but I've got all of my paper, and we do quite well at those antique shows. We really do.
They could get you on Antiques Roadshow.
If they want to.
You could be one of the guys on Antiques Roadshow. That
someday, maybe.
Yeah, let's work on that.
Yeah,
good idea. I'm sure we got friends up there. We can give a ring. Yeah. What do you think of that show?
Love that show. Yeah. In fact, when they came to town, a good friend of mine, Ed Linder, Linder's Furniture, McKee's Rocks, he and I went. I had an extra ticket. I called him up, and because he knows antiques really well as well. He brought like a Russian cigarette box from World War I. Mm-hmm. I brought a map that is so rare, 20th century map, that there's only like a couple dozen left. They were produced in 1932. It's the map of the land of make-believe, and it was by a Czechoslovakian immigrant named Jero Hess. Now this map is would be in the store. Okay, it's worth like $8,000. It'd be in this store, but my daughter loves it. It hangs in her bedroom. so we had a great time.
And they appraised it for you at $8,000.
Yes.
Were you pleased with that appraisal?
Well, I'm an appraiser, so I knew what it would be.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so they were pretty right on.
They were pretty much right on.
Now, do you ever watch that show and they make a call and you're like, that's BS? Or are they pretty good most of the time?
It's, you know, I gotta say, it's pretty good most of the time. You know, it's, if I'm watching it and there's something I think is like something that I wouldn't, you know, sometimes they're like way up there.
Mm-hmm. You know, but you know, I'm sure they edit. They might be seeing like the underside or something. There might be like bad condition or something. You know, so there might be things we don't see that go into their appraisal of it.
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing about those shows, and one thing that I know as an appraiser is that because they do highlight the very special things, there is this general idea that, well, if that's worth so much, then what I have might be worth that much. And so everything's valuable. It is valuable. So, you know, a lot of times people come in here with huge expectations.
Yeah.
And you know, we talk
about sometimes you got to let them down easy, huh?
Sometimes. But, you know, that would you rather know the reality of it Or would you, you know, just want to go on believing?
For $25, I want the truth.
Well, that's what you get.
Here at Shaw Gallery. Fantastic. Good, good, good.
In closing, we would like to once again thank our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Off the Wall Theater, Cefalo's Banquet and Events Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, Arcade Comedy Theater, Downtown, and Bergvavant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. Find out more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. And be sure to follow Pittsburgh's Cultural Talk magazine online. You can find Bergvavant, the It in Pittsburgh, on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribe for free at www.bergvavant.com. This is Brian Edwards saying cheers and good night.